Good morning, a Monday morning. We are with our political observer, Alan Chartok. Alan, let's start with Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia. In Washington, says the New York Times, policy revolves around Joe Manchin. He likes it that way. Mr. Manchin's belief in the need to keep the filibuster has set the stage for a collision between Democrats eager to use its majorities to pass sweeping legislation and a political throwback determined to restore bipartisanship. At least on this issue, he seems to be the tiebreaker.
Well, the Democrats are caught in a very bad position. They got a 50-50 split in the Senate with one vote, Kamala Harris helping out. And what happens now is that if Manchin says no, it's no. Now, one can only imagine that if they lose Manchin, they have lost a key senator. They can't afford to lose him. So whatever he does, they have to in some way go along with him, or it will look like they lose the Senate. That's a pretty bad place to be. Could be a bad movie that you watch at 5 o'clock in the morning while you're waiting to talk to you. But in the end, it is a... It is a reality. That's the way that the cookie is crumbling these days. And Manchin can do what he wants, and they have to let him. Because if they don't, he loses, and then they're gone.
But is getting rid of the filibuster as crucial as they say? In other words, the Democrats have to get stuff done now. Biden now wants this huge infrastructure package, another infusion into the economy to get things going. And with the Republicans standing together and voting no, they really need to move now.
No question. And let me say that I personally am becoming more and more of a fan of doing away with the filibuster and letting the Democrats pass the programs that they want to pass if they can. And, you know, if the Republicans get in, they will, of course, abuse the lack of a filibuster the same way the Democrats will. But right now, I'm such a fan of making major progress on the part of Joe Biden that I think it's great. Let him do it. And then, damn the torpedoes if they do have to lose. I think that they probably could hold on to power because much of what they're doing is approved of by the voters in the United States. Now, of course, we do know, David, that the Republicans are making sure that they don't lose. And how are they doing that? They're, quote, rigging, remember that? Rigging the election. Mm-hmm. They are doing it in such a way as the state legislatures are changing their rules, making it more difficult for people of less resources and people of color to vote. And we all know what they're doing, and they're unashamed about it. It's unbelievable, but they're doing it because in these red states, that's the way you get elected. And it's racism, pure and simple, 101, and that's what they're doing. Chuck Schumer says it's a disgrace. I say it's a disgrace. And somebody in those states is going to say, wait a second now. This is not what democracy is supposed to be.
I'm sure our listeners will remember Dr. Deborah Birx, who served as the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator under the Trump administration. She was in a new CNN documentary and shared, as the headline says, her chilling conclusion that the number of coronavirus deaths could have been decreased substantially if cities and states across the country had aggressively applied the lessons of the first surge toward mitigation last spring, potentially preventing the surges that followed. I did see a number of commentaries in which they said, well, you could have done more, Dr. Birx.
Well, that's true. She could have. We all knew that Fauci knew how to thread the needle. He didn't want to get fired. He knew that there was a point which you could not go past. But we all knew where he was. People considered him to be an American hero. She sat there like a stone on a log. And when he turned around to her and asked her to support his ludicrous comments, she was stone-faced. But that wasn't enough. You know, if she was going to do this and do it right, she had to come clean and say, this isn't right, what's going on? She didn't do that. Now, she's not there anymore, she can do it. But there are times for courage, and her time passed.
Yet it's laid so bare, isn't it, Alan, that the president of the United States, basically what she's saying, was responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths that didn't have to be lost.
And David, you know, I said that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have to wait for Deborah Birx. We do know that all of these deaths have come because Trump ripped off a mask or because Trump made light of the whole thing that wasn't going to happen. And now we have one of the worst outbreaks in the world. No two ways about it. It's Trump's fault. And as I have said many times, a lot of those deaths, maybe 400,000 of them, which Dr. Birx has finally said, is attributable to Trump's malfeasance, period.
Some troubling news when it comes to teaching. Disruption to education during the pandemic are turning people away from a profession that was already struggling to attract new recruits, according to the New York Times. If there's one thing we need in this world, it's teachers.
David, I have said it over and over again. Teachers are the best things that this country has going for it. Our teachers are our hope. I know that as I watch my grandchildren now and my children before them, and I watched what happened when the magic of a teacher, the praise that is instilled in a child, it's so important. Our teachers are getting a little bit more money than they used to, but not enough, not for what they do. And where they are concerned, we can't do enough for them. And David, it's an admirable profession, and it needs to be supported by all of us.
Well, the ship done got stuck, Alan, and now it looks like it's been refloated. We can't not talk about the container ship that's been stuck in the Suez Canal. Quite an operation to get that thing righted, but it looks like it has. It really is an important canal for world trade.
Yes, and what it proves, David, is that we are so interconnected. What goes on at the Suez Canal is felt in New York. It's felt in our gas prices. It's felt in the way in which goods are shipped all over the world. So the interdependence is what comes out of this, the recognition that we are all interdependent on each other. You know, I'm crossing my fingers that they get that thing going, but I'm not so sure. We really, really hope that there wasn't major structural damage and that this is not just a forerunner of things to come.
Our political observer, Alan Chartok, with us.